Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. How are we?
Evan Roberts here on the Fanto Yankee Baseball. Great job by Ed Arzuman, by Steve Apria, because today's a very special day. They're continuing to paint and design and put together the Carton and Roberts studio for SNY whenever we start. So they had to do a little maneuvering today, and everybody did a fantastic job. So good job by Big Ed. Great job by Steve Apria. So we got a lot to talk about. My God. The Yankees' eighth inning meltdown. The Knicks meltdown, which really was the final minute, the third quarter. We'll get to that later. The Nets try to get their heads out of their rear end and win a game tonight in Denver. But last night was something else at Citi Field. Now, let's get down to the reality of things. Okay? Let's just talk shop. Let's talk reality. The only thing you care about, the only thing I care about as a fan, no matter what team you root for, is winning. Because as a guy I know says often, there are winners and there are losers. And last night, the Mets looked as if they were going to be losers. David Peterson really, really, really struggled after he walked the opposing pitcher, Zach Allen. He's hitting a batter. He's walking back-to-back guys with the bases loaded. And the New York Mets look destined to lose this game to the Arizona Diamondbacks. They're down 4-0 in the bottom of the third inning. And to their credit and to their bullpen's credit, they did a great job of frustrating the Diamondbacks. You know what they made the Diamondback bats look like? The New York Mets. And they kept the game close. But we had a moment last night. The moment I've been waiting for and the moment you've been waiting for. And that was the moment where Francisco Lindor did something monumental. Now, I know he got a game-winning hit a couple of weeks ago in Colorado in a Jake start. But last night at Citi Field, where the boos were bubbling a little bit, Francisco Lindor came up in the seventh inning and hit a two-run home run. Minutes before that, let's just call it like it is. There was a scuffle between Jeff McNeil and Francisco Lindor. Okay? The Mets aren't going to admit what happened. We'll get into that in a little bit. But there clearly was a fight. Why do I know there was a fight? Because I'm following the evidence that Michael Conforto and Dom Smith are racing down the tunnel. Okay, so there's a fight between Lindor and Jeff McNeil. But here's the headline. Minutes after the fight, Francisco Lindor showed you something. So you know who the MVP of last night was? Jeff McNeil. Because if Jeff McNeil punched Lindor in the face, or he pushed him, or he called him names, or whatever the hell he did, he got the most out of Francisco Lindor. Because guess what? This is a news flash for some people listening. I don't care that much about lying to the media and lying to the fans. And yes, Jeff McNeil and Francisco Lindor were lying. Because you know what makes everything better? Here's the reality. Winning. Winning makes everything better. If the New York Mets lost last night, you know what this would have been? Craig would have been singing it. It's just the same old Mets. But guess what? They won last night. Francisco Lindor hit a game-tying home run minutes after having a scuffle with Jeff McNeil. So we could all get nuts and sensitive and cry about, oh my God, they lied to me. Can you believe it? Wow, they lied to me. Here's what matters. They won. And not only did they win, Francisco Lindor, who has been a disaster at the plate all season long, has shown a pulse and hit his biggest home run as a New York Met. So if you woke up this morning or you spent last night more annoyed about Lindor lying than Lindor hitting a two-run home run, get your freaking priorities straight, okay? That's not to defend them lying. We could talk about it if you want. That's great. Nobody believes the raccoon rat story. But Francisco Lindor, minutes after having some kind of scuffle with Jeff McNeil, hit a game-tying two-run home run. Thank you, Jeff McNeil. In fact, Jeff, if you've got to punch, kick, scream, or yell at Francisco Lindor every day to get that out of him, I'm with you. I'm with you, Jeff. Let's go. Because Francisco Lindor, after popping up the left field, after an infield hit, great, he did have an infield hit. It probably should have been a two-base error, but, you know, whatever. Give him a hit. And after another pop-up in the fifth inning, Francisco Lindor came up in a two-run game in the bottom of the seventh inning and hit a freaking two-run home run. And maybe him and Jeff McNeil yelling at each other had something to do with it. So thank you for the scuffle. And then, yes, it was only a tie game. The Mets had to go out and win it. And they did in just odd 2021 fashion because we have a runner on second base to start the 10th inning. But either way, Patrick Mazika needed to make a little bit of contact. He did, and the New York Mets had one of their more satisfying wins of the season. Truly was. First game of a homestand. They get a garbage performance by David Peterson. This felt like a loss from the beginning, and they won. And here's what's going to happen. If the New York Mets go on a run right now, and they're hot now. They've won three in a row, right? They're starting to play better baseball. They had a decent road trip. They won two out of three in Philadelphia. They got a split in St. Louis. They've won the opener against Arizona. Let's say the Mets get hot. The rat raccoon thing is going to become a rallying cry. It's not going to just be this thing everyone jokes about and everyone is, you know, faux angry about. Like, oh my God, we got lied to. I can't believe the Mets aren't being honest about a fight that occurred in their dugout, or I'm sorry, in the runway. I mean, really, does it surprise anybody? I'd love to know every piece of information that went into that. I would. Obviously, we know what it was about, because all you've got to do is watch the game. When Nick Ahmed hit that ball in the hole, and because of the odd shift, McNeil and Lindor are so close to each other, there was miscommunication. Both guys were ticked off. It was clear. I was not at last night's game, luckily. Last night was a game I'm glad I wasn't at because getting to watch the game at home, I got to see more than I probably would have seen at the game. I'll be there today. I'm excited to go. But considering what happened, I'm glad I saw it on TV like most people listening. You saw both guys were annoyed. And they both probably said something to each other. McNeil is an intense guy. Lindor probably said, who are you talking to? And all of a sudden they started yelling at each other, and who knows? Maybe they punched each other. I don't know. I'd love to know every detail. I would. We all would. But I'm not delusional enough to think they're going to tell us every detail. Now, should they have handled what they said after the game differently? Should Lindor have said after making the joke about the rat and the raccoon, yeah, you know, we had an argument, but we're a family, we're fine. I guess, yeah, okay, could have said that. Because this happens a lot. This happens a lot in locker rooms. We probably don't know about it half the time. But the reality is this. The New York Mets responded. Because a week ago, at this very moment, on this very show, Joe was on with me, and what were we complaining about? That the Mets didn't show fight. Remember that? That was only a week ago. That Dom Smith was challenged to a fight, that the Philadelphia Phillies and Jose Alvarado challenged the Mets to a fight, and they backed down. Well, last night at Citi Field, they fought each other and then responded and won the game. I'm fired up. Last week, Joe said, I think he even referenced Sal on SNY saying, this is something the 86 Mets wouldn't have done. The 86 Mets would fight. Well, if you want the 1986 Mets, which this team is not, by the way, and I think we all know that, but if that's what you want, this was the 86 Mets. They fought with each other. And probably a lot of the fights we still don't know about today. So I love what happened last night. I love it. I think it's fantastic. Now, it's fantastic because they won. History is written by the winners. And sometimes that's fair and sometimes that's not fair. Gleyber Torres had a great base running play on the Thursday afternoon game against the Astros. And Craig pointed this out and he's so right. No one will ever talk about that play because the Yankees lost. He's right. He's right. So if the New York Mets lose last night and Lindor strikes out instead of hitting a two-run home run, we're talking, oh my God, another loss. They hate each other. This team's a disaster. Sure, we're looking at the fight a different way. But when you respond minutes after the fight with a two-run home run by a guy who needed that two-run home run more than anybody else, and then you win the game three innings later, that's a happy ending. Everybody's happy. Great they fought. Sometimes you need a little fight. Sometimes you need that. But yeah, after the game, look, no one's going to believe the rat raccoon story. I even tweeted it last night. I think a lot of people thought I was upset about the answer. I wasn't upset. I was just, the way it went for me is, I was about, I'd say 20 minutes behind on DVR. And I always say this, I get home late. I want to watch every pitch. So I start the game maybe 45 minutes late, an hour late. And after you catch up with commercials, I kind of almost catch up by the end of the game. So obviously something happened. We all saw it on TV, and I couldn't wait for the game to end to get on Twitter and see what happened. Maybe more details are going to come out. Now, obviously, reporters are not there in the same way they were prior to the pandemic, so you're relying on Zoom calls. Steve Gelbs, whose job is to be right there, isn't right there because he can't be. So no offense to him. He's not offering us any insight. He's just guessing the way we're all guessing. So you're just reliant on the Mets being honest. And they were never going to be honest. So when I read the quote, yeah, we're just, I thought I saw a rat. And McNeil said, I thought I saw a squirrel. No, not a squirrel. A possum. No, not a possum. A raccoon. And then someone else said possum. And we were arguing about that. Obviously, it was BS. And that's what I tweeted out. Yeah, that's not real. But they won. And they responded. And I'm not annoyed on a Saturday morning or offended because Francisco Lindor lied. Because if he didn't lie with the raccoon rat story, he would have lied by saying, yeah, no big deal. Even if it is a big deal or even if it's not a big deal. No one's ever going to be honest about stuff like this. And that's okay. As much as I have a thirst to know everything, and I do and we all do, the reality is we're not going to know everything. So, yes, when that tell-all book comes out, when Mike Puma writes an updated version of his new book, These Walls Could Talk, maybe we're going to get all the details about the fight between Francisco Lindor and Jeff McNeil. And I'd love to read it. It'll be fascinating. But last night was a good night if you're a Met fan. This morning was a good morning if you're a Met fan. And if your anger is at the lie that Lindor told, I would just say this as nicely as I could. Get your freaking priorities straight, okay? If you're a Met fan, your priorities would be winning. And yes, there are winners and there are losers. And last night at Citi Field, guess who the winner was? The New York Mets. And if this gets hot, and if they start rolling, I'm calling it now. There's going to be a friendly debate amongst Met fans. It's going to be a fun debate. There's going to be T-shirts printed. In fact, maybe we should add that to the Carton and Roberts FAN store. And you know what those T-shirts are going to say? They're going to say, I think it was a rat. And then someone else is going to have a shirt that says, I think it was a, what was the other one? A squirrel? Possum. No, not possum. What was the other one, Howard Zuman? Raccoon. Hey, thank you. See, I already forgot. No. I thought it was a raccoon. And those shirts are going to fly off the shelf. It's going to become a rallying cry. Now, let's hope that's the case. Because that means they're winning baseball games. Now, that's not the only thing to discuss. When we come back, one of the ugliest innings you'll ever see. And if you're a Knicks fan, one of the ugliest minutes you'll ever see. I know it extended into the fourth quarter. I get that. I watched every second of that game. But really, it was an ugly minute that cost the Knicks a golden opportunity last night in Phoenix. So there's basketball to discuss. There's Yankee baseball to discuss. And obviously, a bizarre night at Citi Field to discuss. 877-337-6666. Evan Roberts taking you right up until the Yankee pregame show. What I am intrigued by, for whenever the book is written, the tell-all of the 2021 New York Mets, is who came up with the rat, possum, what was the other animal again? I keep forgetting. Oh, my God. Squirrel. No, not squirrel. What was he? Raccoon. I can't think of a damn raccoon. Who came up with the story? Like, who said, all right, here's what we're going with. We're going to go with Jeff and Francisco were arguing about if they saw a rat or a raccoon. I mean, my gut is Alonzo came up with the story, but I'd love to know, like, what went through his mind to say, this is what we're going with. This is what we're going with. I mean, they could have come up with so many different things they argued about. They could have been arguing about, hey, listen, I think the Nets are going to win the NBA title. And McNeil would have been like, come on, this is New York City. Nobody gives a damn about the Nets. It's a Knick town. Like, that would have been interesting. Or maybe they were arguing about Tom Wilson and the non-suspension he got. There are so many. It could have been political. They could have been debating politics. But instead, somebody decided, let's go rat raccoon. So someday, I don't know when, because it'll all come out. It'll come out someday, I think, in some kind of book. Puma's going to write it. Puma's going to be selling this thing 25 years from now. And he's going to say, I finally have the answer on the McNeil-Lindor fiasco. But here's the bottom line. Last night, the Mets won. We'll get to the Yankees in 15 minutes exactly. Specifically, what went wrong last night? As they now encounter a two-game losing streak after playing their best stretch of baseball, which included winning the first two games against the Astros. But let's kick it off with Tony, who's in the Bronx. What's going on, Tony? How are you? Ed, I may need you to pot him up for me, if you don't mind, because my computer is having an issue. So, Tony, go ahead once you're eventually potted up. Oh, you know what? My call screening software is completely off. So, you know what, Ed? I think you'll have to text me the call. So he's telling me it's actually my man Harvey in Dick Sales. So what's up, Harvey?
Hi, Evan. How are you?
I'm good.
I have. I think you're absolutely right. If they staged this, it would have been unbelievable. Okay, but I think one. I think they got the animal wrong. They may have been a skunk there.
They should have gone with the smelly skunk.
That's right.
As the
it's
winning animal.
The white stripe down the body. That's all.
Yes.
But anyway, you know, the bottom line is this, is that anybody that plays sports like I did knows that there are fights in sports, you know, no matter what sport you play. And in my day, you just shook hands and went back to practice or whatever you do. And I think this is what it's going to turn out to be. But if it motivates the Mets to win, like you said, exactly right on the money, this will be unbelievable. But I do know that I don't think anybody in their right mind would figure out that Lindor would do worse than last year's short season. And they're doing everything to get that. Can you imagine 10 years of him hitting 200 or below 200?
Are you worried, though? Are you really worried?
Am I worried?
Are you worried about it?
How could you not be worried? The problem is that they're doing everything to correct that. They've reached out to Victor Rodriguez, who worked with Chili Davis in Boston, who's now the assistant hitting coach in Cleveland, who worked with him for 3 years. They fired the hitting coaches. They're going to do everything to try this guy, you know, to hit well. All right, but let me ask you, and I just hope that this is the motivating factor to get the Mets on in a winning, you know, winning trend.
That's the hope.
I'm going to throw these things out to you. You like this thing, I know, and I'll be quick. Okay, I don't know if this, you know, I couldn't figure out if this ever existed, but there's a team in major leagues that has three players, two of which I think are sons of Hall of Famers, and the other one is the son of a very, very, very good major leaguer.
Toronto Blue Jays, of course.
Starting lineup.
Yep, Toronto Blue Jays. Yep.
That's right.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Kevin Biggio, Bo Bichette, who's not the son of a Hall of Famer, but like you said,
you know, he's
a very good player. Yep.
I got a few others. This is what bothers me sometimes about the Mets. You know, I had just, you know, I didn't think that Steven Matz would ever come back. But the bottom line is, the week that I saw a report that his arm is fine and he's pitching well, Alderson trades him. You know, and it's just typical. The other thing is... I think Cashman is slipping. I'm telling you, Ryan, I cannot believe that he traded Tauchman to San Francisco, and it was a very useful outfielder. And,
yeah.
And the third thing is that, you know, the Yankees could have had Wheeler. You know, I can't. You know, you ragged me for 2 years about Wheeler. Remember that, right? And the Yankees could have had Wheeler.
Sure, sure. Look, here's the thing, Harvey, and thanks for the call. You got a lot in there. That may have been the most action-packed Harvey phone call we've ever gotten, and a lot of good facts. I just want to comment on the Tauchman part because, you know, Wandy Peralta's thrown the ball well. So it's not as if they've gotten nothing back who hasn't contributed. I loved Mike Tauchman. I was always a fan of his. I think he was so impressive during a big stretch of 2019, especially the way he hit left-handed pitching, that I wasn't ready to bury him. But the problem with Mike Tauchman was he wasn't getting opportunities here. Despite how bad the production had been so far for the Yankees this season in left field, between Clint Frazier and Brett Gardner and throwing center field with Aaron Hicks, Tauchman wasn't getting a shot. So as much as I like him, and he is getting a shot in San Francisco and has had some decent performances, it just felt like, for whatever reason, despite the lack of production from Yankee outfielders, the opportunity wasn't coming here. Like, it just wasn't happening for whatever reason. Let's go to Jeff in the Bronx. What's up, Jeff? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, this is Mike in Fresh Meadows, not Jeff.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I'm just guessing. Like, I'm pressing buttons and guessing, so I lost that lottery. But not that I have a problem talking to you, Mike. I mean, it's not like I'm a loser for talking to you. I'm happy to talk to you. What's up?
No worries. No problem, man. How are you doing today?
Excellent, man. What's up?
Nothing. I was actually working at City Field yesterday. I was happy to see that win.
Damn right.
The reason I'm calling, though, is because I had a thought after seeing all these no-hitters this first month. And I wanted to know, in your opinion, does it feel less special?
Yes.
Small ball kind of taken out of the equation.
Well, I think that because there's less of a premium, and thanks for the call, on batting average. I mean, we've seen batting averages all around baseball go way down. That means there are less hits. There are more walks. There are more strikeouts. And even though home runs are down, in general, home runs are a big number, right? That if there are going to be less hits in a game, there's more likely going to be more no-hitters. So, yeah, when Wade Miley, and I'll give you a great example of this. So Gary Cohen mentions on the broadcast, hey, Wade Miley's got a no-hitter through seven. First of all, I was frustrated because I was thinking of picking him up in fantasy and streaming him as a pitcher last night, and I decided not to, so I was a little annoyed about that. But I had no interest in flipping over because I had watched John Means do it the other day. I watched Joe Musgrove do it a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know, I just didn't feel anything special out of checking out Wade Miley going for a no-hitter. Now, if you're telling me a guy's pitching a perfect game, I think that's still special. Because remember, walks are up, right? There's a premium on bringing your on-base percentage up. So it's not as if perfect games are happening frequently. In fact, the last time we had a perfect game, if I'm not mistaken, was 2012. It was either Felix Hernandez or it was the former Met who did it with the White Sox, Philip Umber, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's the last perfect game. That was 9 years ago. So that's not happening frequently. But the no-hitter? Yeah. 100%. The no-hitter is becoming less special. That stinks. It's unfortunate. Especially as a Met fan growing up where the no-hitter was the holy grail. And we finally got to see one. Yes, it was a no-hitter. But yeah, I didn't even have interest in flipping over to check out Wade Miley. Let's go to Jeff in the Bronx on the fan. We'll try him again. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, Evan. How you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. What's up?
Hey, a couple quick points about this whole raccoon thing, and then a question about the Mets roster, if you let me. You know, I get they have a job to do, but to me last night, the New York Mets beat really embarrassed themselves. You know, they were like, they wasted all you hear from them is that, oh, we only get one question on these Zooms, and then, you know, it's hard to ask a follow-up, and the team control is muting us and all that other stuff. And they ask question after question about this, and they wouldn't leave it alone. Not one person asked about Rojas about Peterson. Not one person asked Rojas why Lindor was bunting in the ninth inning.
That's a great question.
A lot of things that happened in the game,
yeah.
They didn't even bother asking. They didn't even ask about today's starting pitcher.
Yeah, so I don't know if you're going to like my answer, but here's my answer. And I'm going to leave you on the line because I want to hear if you buy this at all. I agree with you in terms of, as a Met fan, I wanted to know Rojas's opinion on Lindor actually laying down a bunt in the ninth. Totally agree with you. I want to know who's starting tomorrow. I want to know about Jake. I want to know about Peterson, so I agree with you. But I think a lot of times beat reporters ask questions because they think that the majority of fans, maybe not me and you, but the majority of fans, especially casual fans, are going to be more interested in a sensational story like that than the nuts and bolts of a baseball game. You buy that?
I buy that, but not question. I mean, one of the reporters is saying McNeil looks like he has a black eye. I mean, they were really, really like, you know, and Evan, let me tell you another thing. This is the same group of people, and I'm not trying to beat up on them, but this is the same group of people complaining about this fake narrative they're trying to push. That's pushing fake baseball. The only reason they like the whole man on second in the 10th inning is because it means they get to leave early.
Well, don't get me started on that, Jeff. I mean, I agree. I agree, and thanks for the call. And I'm sure there are a lot of reporters that feel that way. I can't say all of them are like that, but I certainly get that impression from some. But I do think a part of the issue is, and look, I admit this, I think this is something we have to decide on too. So when we have Luis Rojas on and Aaron Boone on, there are going to be certain things that I think and Craig thinks the majority of people are going to want to know about. Even if the hardcore fan, maybe even sometimes myself, say, yeah, I don't really care as much about this. Because you want the mass majority of people to get what they're looking for. So for me, I was interested. I'm not going to lie. I was interested in their answer on the scuffle. No doubt. And those questions have to be asked. Absolutely. But yeah, I want to know about the Lindor bunt. I'm glad you brought it up because I haven't even mentioned it yet. What the hell is he doing? You know, I'm thrilled at the two-run home run in the seventh inning. And there's no doubt he's doing it on his own. But a leadoff man's on in the ninth inning. You're Francisco Lindor. You're not laying down a bunt. The only time I ever want to see Lindor laying down a bunt is if you're down by multiple runs to start an inning and you need base runners. You got the winning run on first base. And I hate to say it, but I'll say it because I thought it. When I saw Lindor lay down that bunt, you know who I thought of? No, I don't want to say it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to say who I thought of. I thought of another middle infielder. I thought of another middle infielder who came over from Cleveland. I thought of another middle infielder that wore number 12. I thought of another middle infielder that numerous times I would say to myself, what is he doing? Why is he laying down a bunt? I thought he was supposed to be a smart baseball player. But I'm not going to say his name. Because despite Lindor's struggles early on, it is unfair to him for me to ever mention him in the same breath as this guy as a New York Met until proven otherwise. But I do think you have to keep this in mind, whether it's Craig and I or it's reporters after a game. Sometimes they are asking questions because they believe, rightfully so sometimes, that that's what the mass majority of people want to hear. But I agree. There were a lot of questions from last night's game that to me would be fascinating. Hey, Luis. And by the way, don't worry. I know it'll be 4 or 5 days till we have him on. It will be asked. Luis Rojas will be asked about, hey, dude, you good with Francisco Lindor laying down a bunt? Anyway, you all right with that? Because he can't be okay with that. He'll try to take the high road, I'm sure, but you can't be okay with Francisco Lindor laying down a bunt in that situation. No way, no how. We'll take more of your Met calls coming up, don't worry. I want to get to the Yankees from last night, And I definitely want to get to the Knicks from last night. It's all coming up right now.
Runners lead off first and second. No one out. Pitch swung on and hit in the air to left field and deep. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone to break open the game. A three-run home run for Josh Harrison. And Washington, like that, takes a 7-3 lead.
Yeah, I mean, that's easy. I don't even know if I really deserve credit for that one. Because I know the Nationals just went ahead. And the Yankee defense that inning was abysmal in every way. But that Harrison home run finished the game off. Every Yankee fan knew, all right, this one's over. As Josh hit that bomb, he hopped a couple of times, enjoyed it. And that eighth inning is one of those innings you just want to flush down the toilet. First of all, Jonathan Loaisiga, for the first time this season, was very shaky. And then just the defense was abysmal. When DJ LeMahieu is making a bad play and a bad throw on the bunt sacrifice, and you've got Aaron Judge forgetting how to play right field. I mean, everything about that inning was an unmitigated disaster. And what was so surprising about that loss last night is even when Yan Gomes and Josh Bell hit those home runs and you're down 3-2, when DJ hits his second home run of the game, and good job by DJ, because DJ's had a very quiet start to the season. He hasn't had a lot of extra base hits, and he was able to at least put together a big-time offensive performance. He was your, you know, besides Tyone, who pitched okay, he was your feel-good player of the day. There was a lot of messes. You know, Glaber took an 0-4. He's showing frustration. He made an error in this game. Aaron Judge is lost at the play. Giancarlo finally got cooled off. The production in the outfield continues to be abysmal. But DJ LeMahieu gave you a very positive day. He has not had a lot of extra base hits this year, and he hits a couple of home runs, a couple of Yankee Stadium home runs, but good for him. But you're playing the Nationals at home in a 3-3 game in the eighth inning, you feel pretty damn confident you're going to win because you got one of the best bullpens in baseball. The National bullpen's okay. It's shaky. And for that eighth inning to unfold the way it did, it was disastrous. It was ugly as hell. And I think what concerns you is that the Yankees put together a really good run of playing quality baseball. They sweep the Tigers. They win the series against the Astros despite the way the series ended. And now all of a sudden, the last 2 days, specifically yesterday, reminded you of the struggles this team has had to begin the season. Number one, a lack of offense. I mean, think about it. Three of their four runs came on solo home runs. And the last run they scored in the ninth inning is when the game was out of hand. Number two, their defense was absolutely abysmal. And the aspect of your team that's been the strongest, your bullpen, really failed. Outside of Wandy Peralta, who you got to give credit to. I know we were talking earlier about the Mike Tauchman trade, but Peralta did a pretty good job helping Tyone get through the seventh inning. But it was your first real hiccup from Jonathan Loaisiga. But the offense didn't do anything. I mean, let's not forget that. Patrick Corbin came into this game with an ERA near 9.5. He's been terrible this season. And Corbin went out to Yankee Stadium and gave you a quality performance, and you couldn't hit the Nationals bullpen. So it was an ugly loss for the Yankees, who dropped to 500. And what makes it a little daunting is that you got to deal with Max Scherzer in a couple of hours. Now, you do have Corey Kluber on the mound, who has pitched really well over his last few starts. But the other thing about last night is you are waiting for a couple of specific guys to wake up, right? There's a couple of guys on this roster led by Gleyber Torres, who we've complimented him because he has shown signs of breaking out of it. You know, Gleyber Torres has had better at-bats lately. His defense has been a lot better. And despite the fact that, you know, he comes into a game last night, hitting 245, no home runs, seven RBIs, you are watching him and thinking to yourself, I think he's coming out of it. And that's not just spin you're going to hear from the manager. Like, you actually feel it. Yeah, you know, had a hit on Thursday, had a hit on Wednesday, drew a couple of walks on Tuesday, had the two-hit day against the Tigers on Sunday, had a hit the day before, had a two-hit day against the Orioles where he drove in a couple of runs. Like, the evidence is there that, okay, he's coming out of it. And like I mentioned, his defense has been a lot better. Last night was a major step back for Gleyber because he didn't have good at-bats. He was shaky defensively. I don't want to say he wasn't hustling on that ground ball to third base when he showed the frustration, because it's not as if he just totally shut down, but he wasn't busting at 100%. And he showed you the frustration. And when you look up and down this lineup, And look, obviously, Aaron Judge is a mess right now. Aaron Judge is a streaky hitter, and right now he's going through a terrible streak. But he did have a hot streak to begin the season. You can forgive Giancarlo for having an offer. The guy's been red hot. But when you look up and down this lineup, and you say, all right, who really needs to get hot? Who is the guy that really needs for this Yankee lineup to live up to its potential? Who's the guy you circle and say, that's the guy that's got to perform better? I don't think it's close. I think it's clearly Gleyber Torres. I think he's clearly the guy. And so one of the biggest negatives I take out of last night is not even necessarily Loaisiga, because for the most part, he's been great. Certainly not Tyone. I mean, Jameson Tyone pitched into the seventh inning. Almost threw 100 pitches. That's a hell of a win. The biggest thing is Gleyber Torres taking a step back, because they need to get him going. All right? This guy needs to hit home runs. This guy needs to drive in runs. This guy can't be hitting 234. He is their cleanup hitter right now. They need to get Gleyber Torres hot. And last night, and look, everybody can have a bad night. I mean, it happens. It's baseball. I get it. That's why I'm not making a big deal about a guy like Giancarlo having a bad night. It happens. But Gleyber Torres needs some big nights because he hasn't had a lot of it. So it felt to me like last night was almost, you know, kind of a step back for him. You did get a home run from Gary Sanchez. Now, Kyle Higashioka is going to catch today. I said this the other day. I really believe it. I think Kyle deserves playing time. He'd earned it. But he is probably a backup catcher, just like Austin Romine has proven in his future endeavor since he left the Yankees. He's a backup catcher. As much as some Yankee fans loved him and said, make him the starter, he's a backup catcher. Gary's going to take this job back. And he had a step in the right direction last night when he hit that just absolute bomb of a home run in the second inning. The problem is, he didn't do anything after that. And neither did the Yankee offense. We'll get more into today's game a little bit later on. A very sexy, Cy Young-filled pitching matchup today between Corey Kluber and Max Scherzer. We'll give you the Yankee lineup coming up in a little bit. We'll come right back and get back to your calls at 877-337-6666. And what went wrong for the Knicks last night? Because really, it was a tiny stretch of the game that completely did them in Phoenix. All that coming up. Evan Roberts till the Yankee pregame.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM, The Fan, WFAN.
A couple minutes after 11 on The Fan, Evan Roberts. Until New York Yankee baseball, a Saturday afternoon at Yankee Stadium, an odd weekend. We don't get this often, where the New York Yankees and the New York Mets are home at the same time. In fact, you have a chance. I don't know how many people are going to pull this off, especially because it's a limited capacity at both ballparks. You have a chance, and this is a rarity, to pull off the New York baseball doubleheader. You've got Yankees-Nationals at 1 o'clock, Max Scherzer, Corey Kluber, and then hours later at 7 o'clock at Citi, you've got Mets-Diamondbacks. So you could, and I don't know if anybody's going to do it. If you're doing it, if you've got plans to pull it off, let me know. Whether it's on Twitter, at Evan Roberts, WFAN, or obviously giving us a call at 877-337-6666. Because I do think that's awesome. I do think pulling off the New York baseball doubleheader would be tremendous because it's rare. Most of the time, not all, but most of the time, when the Mets are home, the Yankees are on the road. When the Yankees are home or the Yankees are on the road, whatever, the opposite. You know what I mean? When one's home, the other one's on the road. And we have a rare weekend where both teams are at home. And honestly, if you're a Met fan, you should be rooting for the Yankees, okay? You never root for the Nationals. There's just no excuse for it. I'm sorry. And don't give me the carton excuse of, it's only May, it doesn't count. It all counts. Every game in the standings matter. So the Nationals are 13-15. The Mets are 14-13. Like, of course, you want to be as far ahead of them as possible. Right now, the National League East is a weird division. The Phillies have gotten hot. They crushed the Braves last night. So I think they've gotten a 3 games above .500. The Mets have won 3 in a row to get a game above .500. The Marlins have actually won 4 in a row. They're a game under .500. The Braves have been so mediocre. They're 2 under. And then you got the Nats at 2 under. So it's a very bunched together National League East. Let us go to Sherman and Clifton. What's up, Sherman? Hello, Sherman. Yes, I can. How are you?
All right. Hey, listen, guess who picked up John Means'
to stream him this week.
Oh, look at you, man. That's impressive. That's impressive.
And, you know, the funny thing is this year we did add a complete game, a no-hitter, and a perfect game category.
Really?
And only because, yeah, believe it or not, figuring because of the kookiness of last year and this year, there was a chance that you were going to get more no-hitters. And look how crazy it's worked out, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. Four no-hitters a month into the season.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. Well, one of the other callers stole my thunder a little bit. But I'm going to tell you, man, I agree with him. And I wanted to see how you feel because I teased you about being overly fair once before. We had fun with that. It's the fact that the media, they really did aggravate me last night, especially because they're beat writers. And to me, it makes no sense. You only get one or two questions. You're on Zoom. And why are you wasting after the third question? Doesn't these intelligent reporters get the fact he's not going to tell you?
That's all it is.
You know? I mean, it's like I used to tease, do they think they're White House correspondents or something? You know?
Yeah.
I can't stand when they do that, even in basketball. Something happens. You're right next to the guy's locker. You see he's getting aggravated. He's not going to tell you. And I just want to see how you feel about that.
But Sherman, I agree that after you ask a couple of questions, and it's clear they're going to lie and not give you a straight answer, there are other things about this game I want to know about. Like, I want to know what the heck Lindor was thinking and what Rojas is thinking when Lindor lays down a bunt. But here's the caveat.
Yes,
the
sir.
Back page, Sherman, of every newspaper is about the rat, right? Every back page. And I think these reporters believe, Sherman, that most people, maybe not you and I, are more interested in the fight and the rat and the squirrel than the intricacies of last night's game.
And I understand that, but you know what? One thing you said about you and Craig, and, you know, listen, man, don't fall into that trap, especially, at least I feel, about your audience, is the fact that we are sports geeks. We do like the minutia of the details. And try not to fall into that trap. I know it's radio, it's entertainment. I get it. But they really annoyed me last night. And I just wanted to give my...
No, I understand. Like, Sherman. I was annoyed, too. I'm just explaining the thought process behind it. That's all. Now, there's this old saying, play the hits. What do most people want to hear? And whether you like it or I like it, they know. Because look, say what you want about these reporters. They're damn good at their job, most of them. As much as they may annoy you, they're damn good at their job. And they know what most people are going to know about. And I'll give you an example. My wife doesn't know or care much about the Mets. She cares that they win just so I'm happy, so I'm in a good mood. But she's not a baseball fan. She's not a Met fan. She knew this morning about the rat story. She knew about Lindor hitting a game-tying home run. But that does sell to the majority of people. Now, as far as who's listening to this radio station, I think it's a mix of everybody. I think there's a lot of people listening right now that, yeah, they're really hot for why did Lindor bunt. They're hot for, hey, tell me more about the minutia of the game. There's a good amount of people. I also think there's a great amount of people that look at that story of the fight and what happened. There's a mix. But I think that's the answer. So don't take it as a defense. It's just explaining why I think that happens, why I think after a game, most of the questions are going to be about that. And look, I think the fight's a big story, but here's my point at the top of the show. They responded to it. The New York Mets, who last week backed down from a fight against the Philadelphia Phillies, and we were all killing them for it, had some kind of scuffle amongst themselves, and within 10 minutes of it, Francisco Lindor hit his biggest home run as a Met. Oh, that's right. His first home run as a Met. A home run that would be on the highlight videos if this season goes where he wanted to go. So this fight could turn out to be that moment we look back on and say, wow, look what happened after. Wow, that sparked the New York Mets. And so the other thing I was kind of expressing is if you are a Met fan and you're angry that Lindor lied to you after the game or McNeil lied to you after the game, get over it. They weren't going to tell us the whole truth. And what I care more about Lindor is hitting two-run home runs in the seventh inning than whether he's telling us a story about a rat and a squirrel after the game. Joe and Clark, what's going on, Joe?
Yo, brother, long time, man.
What's up, man? How you been?
Good. All right, a couple points to make. One is I agree with you 100%. If it gets him going, all I know is in the dugout, after that home run, they panned in on Lindor. For the first time, I didn't see that smile. I saw like a laser focus. He looked mad. That's what I want. If this turns around and start hitting, great. Couple things I want to say is am I sold yet on Lindor because of one home run? Of course not. Especially when I see other shortstops around the league that we could have got for spit compared to what we paid him. Like Simeon has 9 home runs. We could have had him for like not even a quarter we paid him. I mean, I would have taken Didi. Didi's going to put up big numbers. Anyway, the guy I want to get on that no one talks about is McCann. Bro, you watch the games. If he hits the ball in the outfield, I'm happy. He goes games without getting the ball out of the infield. Games. I mean, he has one home run and 6 RBIs. The catcher last night in Arizona has 7 homers and 18 RBIs. I never heard of the guy. I mean, Wilson Ramos has 8 home runs. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, but Joe, look, the best thing Luis did last night, and I loved it, was early in the game, he double-switched McCann out for Tomas Nito, which he would never do if he didn't have a third catcher, which he did in Mazika. And what does Nito do in his first at-bat? He singles. And what does he do in the seventh inning that actually ignited that rally where Lindor hit the home run? He draws a walk. So Tomas Nito gets in the game and produces. And look, I'm sure Nito will start either today or tomorrow, with tomorrow being a day game after night game. But to your point, James McCann's been awful. Nobody's going to deny that. The highlight of James McCann's Mets season has been throwing a guy out at second base to win a game. That's been the highlight of his season. Because I think back to the pass ball in Philadelphia that cost him a game a week ago, and then you hit on it. His offense has been dreadful. Now, he's not here to hit 290, but if he's not going to be A-plus defensively, you better see a hell of a lot more than about 215 behind the plate. Brian in Long Beach. Good morning, Brian. Yo,
hey, morning,
Brian.
Evan, how you doing?
Good, man. What's up?
I just want to talk to you about Francisco Lindor bunting last night. I think the whole rat and raccoon thing was the best thing that could happen to him because he got up in the bottom of the ninth. It was a clutch situation. The team hasn't hit with runners in scoring position or just in clutch in general. And he goes up and bunts. You just made $340 million and you're going to go up and bunt? And it wasn't even a halfway decent bunt because then he gets McNeil thrown out at second.
Right.
I just want to know your thoughts on that.
I thought the bunt was a terrible, terrible idea. And you're right, it was terrible execution. But even if it was executed well, I hate it. I think it's a god-awful idea. First of all, runner on first, nobody out, ninth inning of a tie game. It depends who's up and it depends who's coming up if I want to bunt anyway. I got to know a lot more detail on who's up and who's coming up to even say the bunt is worth it. And I give you a great example of that. In the 10th inning, after Pete Alonso's the free runner and the Diamondbacks elect to walk Dom Smith, they have first and second and nobody out for Kevin Pillar. And it's even brought up on the broadcast, do you bunt with Kevin Pillar? Now, logic would say, hey, all you need is a run, this first and second, nobody out. Of course you bunt with Kevin Pillar. But you don't, in my opinion. Now, what's odd about this is it turned out to be the exact situation as if they did bunt. Because Pillar hits a sacrifice fly where only one guy advances and the Diamondbacks elect to walk VR anyway. So it's set up, bases loaded, one out. And yes, it worked with Patrick Mazika. But to me, I had more confidence in Pillar just swinging the bat, which he did. And again, sacrifice fly, everything would have worked out the same way as if he bunted. But in my opinion, I wouldn't have bunted because of who was coming up and the options Arizona had. Okay. So runner on first, nobody out, tie game in the ninth inning. It's not a lock on bunting anyway. But when I've got Francisco Lindor up, who just hit a two-run home run, who is now 3 for his last 5 at the plate, right? So he's on a hot streak. The last thing I'm doing is laying down a bunt. And I'm not even going to mention, though our last caller did, and maybe heat of the moment I will, but I'm going to try to avoid $300 million. I'm not going to mention his salary. I'm going to mention who the hell he is. He's Francisco Lindor. Why am I bunting? So I hated it. And that kind of play, I would have normally said, comes out of not having confidence in yourself. But you just hit a two-run home run. You would think that Lindor's confidence is at an all-time high. So whether it's today, whether it's tomorrow, it certainly didn't happen last night. I know, Zoom call, you're only allowed one question. Everyone's concerned about the fight. And we've had a few callers mention this. I'd love to know what the heck he's thinking. I would love to know, because it's a horrible, horrible idea. And it gave me flashbacks. It gave me flashbacks to you-know-who. Another number 12 that I'd rather not mention. Ray in Waterbury. Hey, Ray.
How you doing, Evan? Great show, as usual.
Thanks, man.
You know, the Mets bench has been terrific this year. You know, VR and Pillar, they've saved their bacon with these injuries to Davis and Nimmo. You know, they actually carried them the last week or so.
Kevin Pillar finally got hot. Jonathan VR has had a good year since the beginning. Remember, he had that game-winning hit in the doubleheader against the Phillies. He had a couple of hits yesterday. Had a huge RBI single in the sixth inning when you're trying to chip away at the 4-1 game. He's stealing bases. VR's been great. Kevin Pillar got hot after a brutal start. Didn't have a good day yesterday, but for the most part got hot. And you're right. And that's what you got to do. Ask the Yankee fans from a few years ago. That's how they won so many games when they had a crazy amount of injuries in 2019. You need guys to step up. So now it would be nice to see Joey Lucchese step up, considering the Mets had to go to their bullpen in the second inning last night. Let's see him step up. What does the Yankee lineup look like? We'll take a look at that, plus examine what went wrong for the Knicks last night and talk to you as well. Evan Roberts here on the Fan till the Yankee pregame show. I'll get to the basketball in exactly 20 minutes. In a very eventful West Coast evening, the Knicks and Phoenix. I thought what was a must-watch game between the Lakers and the Trailblazers, and really the status of the Eastern Conference playoff picture. The Nets trying to get off the snide tonight with a West Coast, not really a West Coast game, but a late night start in Denver against the Nuggets. So we'll get to all the basketball coming up in exactly 20 minutes. I promise you that. Right now we go out to L.A. Matt's in L.A. What's going on, Matt?
Hey, Evan. Look, Luis Rojas is just not the guy for this job. I mean, his in-game decision-making is questionable at best. But now we have this little tiff between McNeil and Lindor. I mean, when you interviewed him this week with Craigie, you pressed him on if he considered dropping Lindor in the lineup. And you followed up right away with, you know, asking him why when he said no. And he seems like a yes man. He just seems like he is being delivered everything from the front office. He doesn't have his own original thoughts or ideas for this team. And he doesn't have the fire in his belly, I don't think, either. And I'm not saying he needs to be a Wally Backman and go out there and throw passes on the field, but he's got to be able to do one of these things, either be a good in-game manager, light a fire under his team, or at least be able to manage the personalities and keep them from going at each other's throats.
Don't you think that even if they fired Luis Rojas, whoever replaced him would also be a yes man who got their orders from the front office?
Probably going to be the case, because that's baseball now. As you
exactly.
Always say,
exactly. That's
unfortunate. The thing that worries me is I don't see him being the guy that is going to be able to manage this team and take them to a pennant race and make the right decisions down the line, you know, come September, come October. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a guy like, you know, Bruce Bochy was a great manager.
I think we lost you. I don't know if Luis Rojas is that guy or not. That's my kind of view on him through, I guess now it's 87 games. Because let's be honest, that's what we're judging him on. We're judging him on a 60-game season and the first 27 games of this season. And I'd be lying to you if I told you he is the guy. And I'd be lying to you if I agreed with Matt and said, I know he's not the guy. Have there been things that have concerned me about Luis over these 87 games? Absolutely. Are there answers that he gives that concerns me? Absolutely. But one of the critiques of Luis Rojas that really isn't fair is the idea of, well, he's taking all his orders from the front office. Because my counter to that would be, which manager isn't? I mean, that truly is baseball in 2021. Now, maybe other teams do a better job of not presenting it in that way. I thought it was really interesting because this past week when we pressed Luis, not just about dropping Lindor in the lineup, but about Chili Davis and the coaching staff being shaken up, I asked him, well, when did it happen? And he was told it happened before the game. And Craig and I then asked, okay, were you consulted? And the answer essentially was no. The answer was essentially, we told him, or the front office told him, this is what we're going to do. And the question was asked, how would the Yankees have handled it? And so while I think Brian Cashman would have made the decision on his own, same exact way, maybe it would have been presented different. You know, maybe Cashman says to Aaron Boone, what do you think? And whether he listens to him or not, he actually asks him his opinion. Because it sounded from talking to Luis this week, they didn't even ask him his opinion. They basically just said, yep, yep, that's it. We're going to make a change. So maybe it's the way it's presented more than anything else, but we do live in a time in which the manager is a mid-level position. It's not the same job as it was 20, 30 years ago. I also am not going to kill Luis Rojas for the fight. I'm not, because that happens. You know, we talked about the 86 Mets last week. There were fights with the 86 Mets. We killing Davey Johnson for it? No. We end up applauding it. And considering the Mets won last night, and considering Lindor, about 10 minutes after this supposed fight occurred, hits a game-tying two-run home run, to me it sounds like, hey, the drama had a positive reaction to it. But right now, 87 games into his managerial career, to me the jury is very much still out on what kind of manager Luis Rojas is. Joe in Colonia. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, Evan, thanks for taking my call. Before I get to my question, I just got to say, the gentleman who answers the phone is awesome, and kudos to him. He's a great guy.
His name is Big Zoo, and he's a wonderful human being.
Big Zoo, okay. He is. He's awesome. Now, my question to you is, I think it's a long time coming, is Andy Kaufman needs to be put into the Hall of Fame, WWE Hall of Fame. And I'll give you my reasoning why.
Yes.
Everyone gives Vince credit during WrestleMania 1 for having Ali, the Rockette, Liberace, all those big stars there. But if you go back, Lawler was really the first one to get a celebrity to come to wrestling.
You're right.
And I think that turned all
You're
that
right.
around.
You're right.
And I believe he needs to be put in the Hall of Fame.
You're right.
I wanted your opinion.
No, I don't even think it's a question, and I'll give you the evidence, Joe, on why you're right. Okay, so Andy Kaufman did a bit with Jerry Lawler back in the day, and they really made it seem as if it was real. Maybe it was real. I think it was a work. Here's the bottom line. The WWE has placed other celebrities in their Hall of Fame. They have placed Pete Rose in their Hall of Fame for taking a tombstone from Kane at a couple of WrestleManias. They have placed Drew Carey in the Hall of Fame because I don't even remember. I guess he was in a Royal Rumble. They have placed Donald Trump in their Hall of Fame because I think he bought Raw once from Vince McMahon and then was the manager of Umaga in a hair versus hair match at WrestleMania. They have put Snoop Dogg in the Hall of Fame because I don't know why Snoop Dogg's in the Hall of Fame. So if we're going to take the WWE Hall of Fame seriously, are we, by the way? Is that something we're doing? Are we taking it seriously? Well, if we are, not only does Andy Kaufman need to be in the Hall of Fame, there's a bigger joke. There is a bigger, in fact, in my opinion, and trust me, New York sports fans, just wait for it. Okay, this will relate to you. So just, if you hate wrestling, take a deep breath. This will relate to you. The biggest travesty as far as guys not in the WWE Hall of Fame is concerned. Do you know the answer, Big Zoo? And if you're screening a call, just tell them to hold on. All right, they can wait. Big Zoo, do you know the biggest travesty of a guy not in the WWE Hall of Fame?
Well, I'm guessing it's going to be a New York-related guy since you told the audience that it would relate to them, right?
That's right.
Is it one Lawrence Taylor?
It is one LT Lawrence Taylor because, Giant fans, you may not know this. Lawrence Taylor didn't just wrestle for the WWE. That'd be one thing. Like, oh, great, he wrestled a match. Not only did Lawrence Taylor wrestle a match at WrestleMania, which again, huge thing. Guy wrestled at WrestleMania. Lawrence Taylor main evented WrestleMania. He main evented WrestleMania. And guess what? The match was actually good. So, listen. If we're going to spend more than 30 seconds, and I think we have. I think we just spent 3 minutes on it. Breaking down the WWE Hall of Fame and talking about the celebrities that are in it. And no offense, by the way, to those celebrities I mentioned. Like, I get it. Pete Rose, Donald Trump, Drew Carey, Snoop Dogg. Okay, fine. They have done stuff in WWE history. It's not a knock on them. It's more a knock on the idea that how can Lawrence Taylor not be in? The guy main evented at WrestleMania. So, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I went on that rant. But listen, the caller brought it up. What do you want from me? I responded to it. No, can't blame me. Tom in Fairfield. Hey, Tom.
Hey, I just want to go back to the Lindor bunt. I think it's, you said it before, but I think it's just a fundamental, like, lack of confidence. Even if Lindor didn't do it on his own and they gave him the sign, that's basically Rojas in the dugout, like, taking their confidence away from him, which is just the
there is, Tom, I'm going to tell you right now, there is no way in hell they put the bunt on. No way. That did not come from the dugout. That came from Lindor. And yeah, it reeks of a guy without confidence, but my question would be, you just hit a two-run home run. Why would you have a lack of confidence in that moment? Dennis in Yonkers. What's up, Dennis?
Hello, Evan. How are you? Hold on.
Good.
Speaker, there you go. How you
beautiful.
Doing?
I'm doing great. What's up?
I actually listened to more than 30 seconds of your weekday show. Because
that's a win, I guess.
Somebody tipped me off. No offense to either of you. But someone tipped me off to the fact that you had Joe Judge on. And I was going to go into that, but I'll pass that. I'll leave that for another time because football is kind of on the back burner.
Gotcha.
But I'll say this. If you're listening to him again and watching his show again, Giant fans should be thrilled with him as coach. And you and Craig were 100% right. You don't see a 6'10 coach as loved as he is, and this year will be different.
Absolutely. The bar has changed very quickly.
Correct on that.
Yep. I agree. I mean, I think that when you go 6-10, it's just a sign of, and I think we lost Dennis, but thank you for the call. That was a sign of, hey, we're seeing that we're no longer incompetent. Okay? But now the bar is win the division. And that's when... That's when the bar starts to raise. So, you know what I think of with coaches who are loved right away? And I don't want to compare him to him because I do feel bad. I think this will annoy Giant fans. But remember how beloved Eric Mangini was? He was the man genius. And look, they won 10 games. It wasn't a 6-10 year. They actually made the playoffs. But it just is, it shows you how quick New York can change on you. And I think the other example more recently is Giancarlo. I mean, Giancarlo's being booed at Yankee Stadium 3 days ago. He's hearing MVP chants. By the way, speaking of chants, how about the Yankee fans last night? First inning, they're chanting blank Altuve. Is that here to stay? Is that going to be one of those, no matter who they're playing, this chant is just going to exist? Is this like the whistle at Madison Square Garden? Like, what is going on? Is this a Red Sox? It's a Saturday, so I don't want to say the word. Stinks. During the week, I get very vulgar, and I apologize. I'm going to try to cut down on that. I was thinking about that last night on the ride home. No more. But on Saturday, I'm even less vulgar. So, you know, the Red Sox, S, that word. Is that sticking at Yankee Stadium? That'd be pretty cool if it did. All right, when we come back, we got plenty of time for more of your calls. So everybody calm down. Talk to everybody as we take it right up to Yankee pregame show. But a lot of things to touch on. What went wrong last night for the Knicks? Should you be concerned about the Nets? And the latest on the NBA playoff scene, because we are headed towards what could be a crazy final 8 days of the regular season. So we'll touch on the hoops coming up. We will talk to you. We'll check in on the Yankee lineups. There's still a lot to check off the list as we take it right up until the New York Yankee pregame show at 12:25. Rarely can you pinpoint, you know, a minute of a basketball game, not late fourth quarter, and say the game was lost here. But let's be honest. When Derrick Rose, who has played really, really well over the last few weeks since he came back from COVID. When he hits that three to put the Knicks up by seven with a minute to go in the third quarter, and I always think this way when watching basketball games, close the quarter well, you're up by seven, you know, have me up by four or five going into the fourth quarter, I feel pretty good about myself. And unfortunately, over the final minute of the third quarter, I think the New York Knicks blew the game last night. First, Kaminsky had an easy layup. R.J. Barrett missed a three, and R.J. actually played well in the second half, one of the few Knicks that did. Payne hit a three that got him within two. Julius missed, I think it was a step-back jump shot. And then here's the sequence. You're up by two with 8 seconds to go. Devin Booker misses a running layup. They get a second-chance opportunity by Craig, who tips it in to tie the game up. So it already feels like, what an awful close. 7-0 run, final minute. Damn, this is awful. And then RJ has this lazy, I don't know what he's thinking, second-to-go turnover in which he just kind of throws the ball in without looking. It's tipped away by Payne, who then makes the shot to buzzer, and the Suns have a two-point lead. And right then and there, it just felt like the game was over. It felt like that's it, especially against a good team like Phoenix. And we saw this at the Garden a few weeks ago. You can't let a team like this back in. And the Knicks had a chance late in the third quarter to really step on them. And then, and I know this has to drive you nuts because it drives me nuts watching them play, Jay Crowder just goes on and puts on a clinic in the fourth quarter of this game and really the second half of this game. I think he made four threes in the second half of this game, and the Knicks got absolutely destroyed in the fourth quarter. That's why you see the score. Maybe you woke up, maybe you didn't watch it, and you're like, wow, Knicks got killed. They lost by 23 to Phoenix. They were up in this game. This is a game they could have won. And things just got so ugly in the fourth quarter. They lost their cool a little bit, which I got to tell you, I didn't have a huge issue with, only because... And there were a few instances. One was Taj Gibson when he goes out and just shoves Chris Paul to the ground. And if memory serves correct, at this point in the game, it was a 10-point game. Now, cat's out of the barn, in my opinion. And you could argue, oh, you know, Taj Gibson's a sore loser. Taj Gibson's losing his cool, which I think a part of that's true. But I also think if you're a Knick fan, you're frustrated too. Chris Paul is sneaky, a pain. You know, Chris Paul is a sneaky, dirty player. I don't even know how sneaky it is, but he is sort of at times a dirty player. And so I think if you're a Knick fan a little after midnight last night, knowing this game is over down 10 or 11 with 7 minutes to go, you love when Taj Gibson kind of threw him to the ground. I know you handed Phoenix a couple of points, so I think Paul actually missed one of the flagrants. I say you handed him a point, essentially. But I didn't look at that as, oh, this is disgusting, this is disturbing. I looked at it as a Knick team that was ticked off. Chris Paul, like I mentioned, can sometimes get under your skin without the officials realizing it. And Taj took a shot at him. But I think being shorthanded also hurt them because it made them... you know, not have that option of going to IQ for instant offense or Alec Burks to drill threes. I mean, early in this game, Julius Randle and Reggie Bullock were really carrying the load, and then Bullock cooled off. RJ had a big second half in this game, but they just didn't have enough answers. And they come up short against the Phoenix Suns on a day in which the Celtics got crushed by 22, Miami got a big victory against Minnesota, and Charlotte won by 10. And so it leaves them in a position right now, when you take a look at the Eastern Conference, where they are just a half game up on Atlanta. They do have the tiebreaker on them. Keep that in mind. And they're up one in the loss column. So they do have a little bit of a cushion on Atlanta, whose schedule is very soft the rest of the way. They're only a game up on Miami, and that's the concern. Because Miami, remember, swept the season series. They've got the tiebreaker. So seeing Miami jump the Knicks doesn't feel that crazy right now. But what you got to feel good about, this is my biggest takeaway from not the Knicks loss, but the landscape of the Eastern Conference and how it impacts the Knicks. I think the Celtic loss last night was so brutal and so damaging for them that I think your chances of keeping in the real playoffs and avoiding the play-in tournament went up huge last night. Because keep this in mind about the Boston Celtics. Because right now, the Celtics have to jump you. The Celtics, Miami, and Atlanta are all going to have to jump you if you fall down to the play-in tournament. Listen to what Boston has to close out the season. Two games against Miami. And what's good about that is someone's losing. So like I mentioned, both of those teams need to jump you for you to fall out of a regular playoff spot, a top six seed, and go into the play-in tournament. And these two teams are facing each other. And even though they're in Boston, right now, anybody think the Celtics are winning both of these games the way they played recently? Losing to Chicago, losing to Portland. They did beat Orlando the other night. And then the rest of their schedule sort us off. Cleveland, Minnesota, and then the showdown with the Knicks at the Garden, which could be epic, depending on what the standings look like. Obviously, yeah, who knows? Maybe the Knicks have a big enough lead where that game doesn't matter. Miami's got a tough schedule. Miami's got the two with Boston on the road. They play Philadelphia, though. I don't know what that game's going to mean for the Sixers because it looks like they're pretty much wrapping up the one seed. A game against the Bucks, which also, you know, depending on how things fall with the two seed, that could be wrapped up for Milwaukee. And then they wrap it up against Detroit. So right now, if you're a Knicks fan, and it was a frustrating loss last night, sure, you have to feel very good about yourselves avoiding this play-in tournament. Now, they've got two games left on this trip. They have a brutal afternoon game tomorrow in L.A. against the Clippers, and then a wrapper-upper game that I don't know how to judge against the L.A. Lakers. Because what's the status of LeBron James? I don't think anybody knows right now. I mean, has there been an update on LeBron? Obviously, he didn't play last night, the big game against the Trailblazers. He had the ankle issue, but now he's missing games for an unknown reason. So I don't even know how I would look at that Laker game, but if you can split the next two and get out of this trip 3-3, coming home to wrap up the year against the Spurs, the Hornets, and the Celtics, you'd have to feel pretty darn good about yourself. And I'll say it again. The advent of the play-in tournament has been a huge, huge winner. I think there would be much less drama in the NBA season, not only out west with the Lakers situation, but out here in the Eastern Conference, if there wasn't a play-in tournament. And I'll tell you why. The Knicks would be, it'd be over. They'd be four games up, I think. Actually, more than that. I think they'd be 5.5 games up on just making the playoffs. So there'd be no drama about, oh man, I don't want to fall to 7. There'd be none of that. And obviously the West, it's obvious. So the Lakers last night lost to the Portland Trailblazers in what was, let's face it, let's call it like it was. It was a huge game. It's weird to say that. It's weird in an NBA regular season to ever say, wow, this is a huge game for the LA Lakers. But they want to avoid the play-in tournament. Now, I'll give Anthony Davis credit. I mentioned the other day, Anthony Davis has not looked the same since coming back from the Achilles injury. He was a monster last night. But it wasn't enough to overcome Dame Time and Damian Lillard, who missed 6 shots all night. And the Portland Trailblazers not only get the tiebreaker against the Lakers, but they're now a game ahead. So, think about this for a second. If the season ends the way things are lined up right now, okay? The Los Angeles Lakers would play the Golden State Warriors. The winner makes the playoffs. The loser has to go into another play-in game. So look, there are still pretty good odds that both the Lakers and the Warriors would find their way into the postseason. It's not a winner-take-all game or a loser-goes-home game. A winner does advance. The loser gets another crack against the winner of Memphis-San Antonio, which is not quite as appealing. But the fact that the LA Lakers, the defending reigning NBA champions, may be in a spot where they're in the play-in tournament and a loss away or two losses away from not making the playoffs is incredible. And it's one of those weird things where, look, I'm not sitting here rooting for TV ratings to be good. Like, that's not what I care about. I care about my team winning, and I care about being entertained. I don't work in the NBA league offices. As much as I love the league, their ratings are great, good for them. If they're not, it is what it is. It doesn't affect me as a basketball fan, just like it doesn't affect football fans or baseball fans. But if the LA Lakers got knocked out and didn't make the real playoffs, Adam Silver would not be happy. I mean, there would be a lot of upset faces in the NBA league offices if they don't get the Lakers in a couple of rounds of the NBA playoffs. But you know what? Not my problem. Ain't your problem. I've heard some basketball fans say, yeah, you know, it'd be fun to have the drama, but come on, what's the playoffs without defending NBA champions? What's the playoffs without LeBron James and Anthony Davis? You know what the playoffs are? They have fun without the Lakers. Okay, let's not act like it's their birthright where they have to be in the postseason. So I want everybody to think about this for a second because I find this hilarious. The Los Angeles Lakers are 37-30. Right now, if the season ended today, they're in the play-in tournament. The New York Knicks have the same record. They would have home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs against the Atlanta Hawks if the season ended today. As John would say about baseball, you know, Susan, you can't predict baseball. Who in their right mind would have predicted that? Now, as far as the Nets are concerned, am I concerned? Should I be concerned? Yeah. Look, it's not necessarily about the three seed. It's not necessarily about a four-game losing streak. But we've seen during this losing streak the things that could kill the Nets in the postseason. And I don't even mean Kevin Durant having an awful fourth quarter, or really an awful game in general against the Dallas Mavericks. I mean the easiness to get to the rim. I mean being beat on the offensive glass the way they've been beat. I mean not having enough answers defensively. I mean a head coach that in a seven-game series will probably be outcoached by Eric Spoelstra. We have seen the weaknesses that can derail the Nets. Now, one counter you can have is, but James Harden. Look, and you can't blame me for thinking this. This is not about being negative. This is about being real. We have barely seen these three guys play together. So besides, I think, fairly questioning, can this science experiment work in that these guys have barely played together? I don't care how close they are. Can they go out and win an NBA championship together without having that many minutes together? My other question is, can they stay healthy? Because starting in about 2 weeks, yeah, we're almost there. We are a week away from the regular season ending. We are 2 weeks away from the NBA playoffs starting. We are 2 weeks away from, let's call it like it is, championship or bust time. You really think I should be confident that these three guys who have not been able to be healthy at the same time all year are going to find a way for the next 2 months to be completely healthy? So yeah, I'm concerned. And who wants to go into the playoffs not playing well? And who wants to deal with a potential Game 7 on the road? Because the two seed, in my opinion, is gone. I'm sorry, it is. The Sixers are peaking at the right time. They've won 7 in a row. The one seed is theirs, clearly. The Bucks have won 5 in a row. They held off Houston last night and, as you know, swept the Nets in the back-to-back. And the Nets are going in the wrong direction. And I'm not convinced the Bucks are losing another game in this regular season. And if the Brooklyn Nets want to get a 2-seed, which some people don't think is a big deal, okay, they need the Bucks to lose a game. And oh, by the way, they got to win all their games, including tonight against the guaranteed MVP Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets. The Bucks play the Spurs, the Magic, the Pacers, the Heat, and the Cavs, and the Bulls. They lose in a game, maybe one. So the Brooklyn Nets are going to, in all likelihood, have to go on the road in the semis and in the conference finals to get to the NBA finals. They made their road more difficult by the way they've played over the last week and a half. Now, one quick thing, because I do agree with this, and I've said this on the Brooklyn basketball podcast I do. The Nets have faced no adversity on the court this season until now. And maybe that's a good thing. But now, respond to the adversity. Okay, it's one thing to face it, which they have, especially with some dreadful fourth quarters in Milwaukee and certainly against Dallas the other night. They've lost 4 in a row. They're facing their first adversity on the court of the season. Cool. Now go spit at the adversity tonight in Denver. Go beat the Nuggets tonight, and I'll champion Kyrie's thought of, hey, we faced adversity and responded. But if you face adversity and you don't respond, what's the positive out of that? All right. There's your hoops. We'll come back with your calls. Plus, we'll check in on the Yankee lineup. We're here till the Yankee pregame.
Sports Radio 101.9.
Noon 04 on the Fan, our final half hour together, and then Saturday afternoon baseball in the Bronx. You'll hear the voices of Susan Waldman and John Sterling, the New York Yankees, the Washington Nationals, interleague play, Cy Youngers going at it, Corey Kluber, who's been great his last two starts, Max Scherzer, who pitched a complete game in his last start. Wasn't Max's last start the complete game that he got over with so that he could help deliver a baby? I think that was the story. I think his wife gave birth to a kid. Max pitched, did it efficiently, did it brilliantly, and then as soon as the game was over, just ran out of there and said, "All right, I got a baby to go get." So Max is on the mound for the first time since that delivery. Let's check out the Yankee lineup. Let's see what we got today. We do have DJ leading off at third base, so he's going to play third base again with Gio Urshela out of the lineup. Not on the injured list, so it's a day-to-day thing with him. Giancarlo is DHing. Aaron Judge, who's been a mess lately, is batting third. Gleyber Torres, I mentioned this earlier, had a very rough night last night. He's cleaning up at shortstop. You know who's batting fifth? This is where it gets ugly. This is where the New York Yankee lineup, and I guess you could argue it gets ugly with Gleyber the way he's hit. But the fifth place hitter for the New York Yankees is Brett Gardner. That's all you need to know. But look, the reality is the Yankee outfield just hasn't been productive. I mean, that's just the way it's been so far this season. Aaron Judge has been fine until recently. The Judge thing is a sort of new phenomenon. But Brett Gardner's hitting 200 with no home runs and three RBIs. Clint Frazier is playing left field. Look, Clint actually hit the ball hard last night. So I got to give him some credit. Plus, he made that great diving catch. Wasn't a dreadful night for Clint. With that said, he's hitting 156. So, I mean, the season's been dreadful. But he did show a pulse last night. Mike Ford is going to play first base and bat seventh. You know what Mike Ford's batting this year? 091. Kyle Higashioka is going to be behind the plate. He has cooled off since given more of the opportunity. And he's going to catch. And batting ninth and playing second base would be the immortal Tyler Wade. So, yeah, this is a Yankee lineup right now that 4 through 9, I mean, really 3 through 9, features guys that are not hitting. But who knows? Maybe facing a great pitcher, even at this age of his career, will get these bats going. And keep an eye on Max Scherzer for this reason. Max Scherzer is a free agent at the end of the year. Obviously, the Nationals won the World Series a couple of years ago. Where are they is a fair question. I mean, right now, it's so early in the season. They're in it. Everybody's in it in the National League East. Everybody's within 2.5 games. But if the Nationals have a bad year, if there is separation in this division, would they entertain the thought of trading Max Scherzer? Now, I'm not suggesting that for the Yankees, by the way. I'm not saying that that even makes a lot of sense considering all the money that's owed to him. There is a team, though, that jumps out at me. There are two teams that jump out at me for Max, and they both directly impact the New York Yankees. And that would be the Boston Red Sox, who are off to this surprisingly good start, 7 games above .500, and certainly has showed a willingness to spend when they feel they're close. And if the Red Sox are hovering in a real pennant race, I don't think it would stun anybody to see them go out and say, let's go for it. And the other team would be the Toronto Blue Jays, a team that really tried to spend a lot this offseason. And they did. I mean, they made moves. They obviously signed George Springer, but it seemed like they were in on every big-time free agent. So while I don't picture Max being in the mix to be traded to the Yankees, I do think Max Scherzer will be a very interesting name to keep an eye on, especially in the American League East. Let's get back to your telephone calls. Ian is calling from Queens. What's up, Ian?
What's up, Evan? I appreciate you taking the call, and I like always, it's a joy in the afternoons, even more with joy on Saturday mornings after a Mets win. And I've got two quick Mets points, one a little more sarcastic than the other. I'm putting part of the blame on last night on MLB The Show, because if I know you and Carton have been playing this, by no means, I don't know how in the world Jeff McNeil is ranked in 89 and Francisco Lindor is only in 88. So I think there's a little animosity there in the ratings.
Started the whole fight. I could see it. These guys take that very personal, those rankings.
It could very well be true. And secondly, I don't know if I'm just in a New York bubble, if it's a Mets bubble. You know, KFC from Barstool has his Mets misery bracket of all the wacky stories that have happened. Is there any franchise in sports that has more outlandish stories like a rat and a raccoon that really doesn't even sniff the upper echelon of the crazy Mets stories as the Mets franchise. I just can't picture anyone else unless I'm just in a New York bubble and I just hear these stories nonstop.
It's a great question. I've given it thought because sometimes we overrate the things that happen to us because we only pay attention to ourselves. But I try to pay attention to everything, and it does feel like the Mets have had weirder stories than most teams in baseball over the last two decades. And a lot of it's brought upon themselves. Some of it is not that bad. Some of it is really bad. I don't know why, but I think of Tony Bernazard for some reason. That one jumps out at me. When Tony Bernazard just ripped his shirt off when he was young. I don't know why that makes me laugh. Tony Bernazard just ripping his shirt off and yelling at minor leaguers. But yeah, it does seem like the Mets have a lot more of these. But think about this, and this is something right in front of our face that we don't pay attention to, that we should. And I pointed it out very briefly on the show earlier, but I'll point it out again. Last night, the New York Mets beat the Arizona Diamondbacks 5-4. The Mets had this great victory. They came back. Lindor hits a home run. There's a scuffle in the dugout right before. They get a game-winning fielder's choice by Patrick Mazzica. If I ask you, why'd the Mets win this game? You know, you'd have a lot of reasons. Well, the bullpen did a great job. Lindor hit a two-run home run. The McNeil-Lindor fight. You come up with a million different reasons. The Arizona Diamondbacks were 1-16 with runners in scoring position. Like, I don't even know if the Mets have pulled that off this season. But they're the Diamondbacks. They're the other team. Who gives a damn? They put the Mets to shame with how awful they were with guys on base last night. So sometimes, yeah, we just pay a heck of a lot more attention to what happens in our backyard. Jeff is down in Miami. Good afternoon, Jeff.
Hi, Evan. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm originally from Plainview, New York.
Nice.
I'm an avid baseball fan. And considering these players nowadays, if I go to a game, I used to go to a game, I remember my first game in 1950. You know, all these guys, they doubleheaders were nine-inning games. If I want to see a seven-inning doubleheader, I'll go to a softball game. I like to see nine-inning games, no matter what.
I'm with you.
Second base is ridiculous.
I'm with you. You know what's funny, Jeff? You don't have to go back to I watched the game in 1950. I can play this game. You know, I watched the game in 2019, and they didn't put a guy on second base, and they didn't have seven-inning doubleheaders. So I'm with you. You don't even need to go back to the 60s or 50s to say back in my day. All you've got to do is say 5 minutes ago back in my day. I've gotten used to it. I don't like it. But it's like things in life sometimes. You should voice your displeasure, which I have numerous times. I'm not going to do it every single day, though. I just can't. Like, I'm not going to start today's show by complaining about the extra inning rule. And it's not because the Mets won. It's because I do it every time there's an extra inning game. I just have to accept this is the rule. And I have to admit this. And this is not a positive, so don't take it as a positive. I'm just giving you a fact. I mean, there's no denying that the extra inning rule is working for what they tried. And what they wanted was for games to end. And they all tend to end in the 10th and 11th inning. I mean, there's no denying it. So what they were trying to get out of it has absolutely worked. Bob in Brooklyn. Hey, Bob.
Hi. Thanks, F. About those Brooklyn Nets, I'm so overjoyed that we have, after all of these years, a major league franchise that calls itself Brooklyn. And I listen to the games on a fan. Now, you covered a lot. You were right. You covered all of their problems before. My two favorite players are Nick Claxton and Bruce Brown because they can actually defend, rebound, yes, and score. They have a complete game. They play very hard. But I am really pessimistic about the playoffs, and I don't get something. Lots of times they give up all of these second-chance points, and they're not good defensively. The opposing team goes on a run, and then the Nets get sloppy with the turnovers. And very often when they lose, I'm listening to Tim Capstra on the radio, and the opposing team is beating them with old-school basketball. And I don't get Sean Marks has been there for a while now, and it's about the analytics, and now he's got Mike D'Antoni, and it's all about the three-point shots, and it just doesn't seem to work, and the big centers dominate them. Nick Claxton, I love him, but he's kind of a stretch five, and DeAndre Jordan is not that big either. I don't get it. Why is this commitment to the analytics?
Because it does work. You know, as much as you may not think it works, it does. I mean, we live in a different NBA, and that NBA has worked. I mean, look at the success of the Golden State Warriors, and you could say, well, they had superstars. Well, so do the Nets. I love Bruce Brown, too. What I have found peculiar, even though Bruce did play a decent amount of minutes against Dallas, is how often Steve Nash forgets about him. How often we see Bruce Brown not a part of the mix. Nicholas Claxton, though, is going to have to be huge. And his minutes have been sort of limited since he's come back. He missed a lot of time because of COVID protocol. Because here's the reality. DeAndre Jordan, who did not play against the Dallas Mavericks. DeAndre Jordan is one of those guys where sometimes he gets a pivotal role and plays you 25 minutes. And sometimes he disappears. In the second game against the Bucks, they started DeAndre at the five. He played 15 minutes. We never saw him again. Never saw him again. In the first game against Milwaukee, he played like 25-plus minutes. In the game against Dallas, DNP. But Nicholas Claxton and how he reacts, especially potentially in a first-round series against Bam Adebayo, which is scaring me right now. I mean, the vision and the thought of having a deal with Bam in a seven-game series, not that the Nets shouldn't win the series, of course they should, is frightening. But the rotations of this head coach, at times, has left me scratching my head. And it feels like here we are a week until the season ends, and he's still toying around and playing around. I have no idea what this rotation is going to look like come playoff time. And look, a lot of it is going to be who they're playing. I acknowledge that. A lot of it is going to be the matchups. But how, at times, he forgets about Bruce Brown, who gives this team energy, who, I don't care his size or not, gives him second chance opportunities. How many times do we see Bruce Brown amongst the trees getting a big offensive rebound? Happens all the time. But I worry about the coach. And I worry about the health. I mean, just because James Harden says he's going to be back before the playoffs, okay, come back before the playoffs and let me see you stay on the court. The last time he was about to come back, he had a practice and had a major setback. So it's not being negative, it's being realistic to be very skeptical about the health of this team going into the postseason. We'll take some more of your calls as we ride you right up until the Yankee pregame show, which is about 8 minutes away. Yankees Nationals, a game you'll hear right here on The Fan. If you are driving the Yankee Stadium, let me give you an update. The tarp is on the field, so if you are running late, good news. The Yankee game is likely not to start on time, but I pay for the Weather Channel premium. Okay, I think that's an extra $2 or $3 a month. So I can really break down the forecast in the Bronx today. They're going to play. Eventually, they're going to play. There's rain in the forecast till about 2:30, 3 o'clock, and then the skies are going to clear. So there may be a little delay. You'll hear John and Susan. You'll probably hear Sweeney, but you will definitely hear Yankee baseball at some time today. Same thing for the Met fans who are going out to city tonight. I know I am. It may not be the nicest night in the world, but there won't be rain. They'll play baseball tonight, and they should play baseball at some point today in the Bronx, but the tarp is on the field. So, if you're rushing, take a deep breath. Okay, don't worry. You'll be fine. John and Susan will take over for the Yankee pregame show. You will eventually hear them call the game today. May hear a little Sweeney Murdy mixed in as well, but you got your baseball covered. Thank you to Rosenberg. Thank you to Big Zoo. Thank you to Steve Apria. And thank you to you. Craig and I, Monday at 2 o'clock. Have a great weekend. Goodbye.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. The Fan. WFAN, New York.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.